Welcome to Life on Less Meds, a podcast that reveals the truth about drug side effects and the best strategies to manage them. And now your host, Dr. Yosef Witdering.
Hi, I'm Dr. Yosef Witdering. Today I'm joined by a special guest. This is Dr. Georgia Eade. She's written the book, Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind. And she's kindly agreed to come on and speak with us about the importance of nutrition in mental health, which is the topic of her book. I know many who listen to this channel may have some interest in dietary modifications and how that relates to mood, but some of you may not. So we're going to be doing an introduction into this topic with Georgia. And so, Georgia, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, I think a really great place to start with this is maybe you could just tell us your story. You know, as a conventional psychiatrist, Harvard trained, how did you end up becoming interested in dietary modification for mental health?
Yeah, you know, well, first of all, thanks, Yosef, for inviting me on to talk with your listeners. I'm really happy to be here. And I think we share a lot of priorities in our work. So I honestly never thought about the relationship between food and mental health once in medical school, 4 years of medical school, 4 years of residency. It was not a topic that we were taught about, and it was honestly not a topic that had ever crossed my mind. I really thought of food, my food choices, as a woman who had always dealt with a weight problem since she was a very, very young child, I'd always thought of food as simply a way to control my weight. I really didn't understand how important it was to my total health, including my mental health or the mental health of my patients. And so it wasn't until I started struggling with my own health issues in my early 40s and chose to address some of those issues with some experimental changes to my diet that I started to question how important it might be to every aspect of our mental health. And the very short story is that I was able to reverse every health issue I'd ever come across in my early 40s. You know, things like chronic pain and migraines, and what some people might call fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, fatigue, etc. I was able to reverse all of those issues by changing my diet, and I wasn't trying to improve my mental health. It didn't seem to me to, you know, be a priority at the time. I didn't think of myself as having any major mental health issues. But when I changed my diet in these very unexpected ways, these very unorthodox ways, my mental health improved quite substantially. And I hadn't even noticed that it needed help. So my mood, my energy, my concentration, my productivity, my sleep, everything improved noticeably. And that's when I started to think, well, this diet seems to be good for the brain. I wonder if this diet could help so many of my patients who are not getting better. I mean, most of my patients were not getting that much better. And I think that's true for a lot of psychiatry practices. I mean, certainly was true for a lot of my colleagues and friends I'd studied with in residency and mentors and people who had, you know, in practice that I, who had been practicing for 30, 40 years. Just about all of us had the same experience. Most of our patients just weren't getting that much better, no matter how hard we tried. So that's how I first became interested in the relationship between nutrition and mental health. And then when I started studying it independently, is when I came across this wealth of information about food and the brain, which I now use every day in my practice to help people. And that's now the focus of my research and my writing and my speaking and the book and all of my clinical work. And it's really been the most powerful tool I have available to help people with all kinds of mental health conditions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that introduction. When you were talking about your personal experience improving, it makes me think about something that actually happened in my life, which I didn't tell you about at the beginning of it. Like, this has got to be the most common story I've ever heard of someone getting hurt, but I used to do CrossFit, and I'm sure you know where this is going. You know, I was doing, you know, this exercise where you'd go into a squat and then you throw like a heavy medicine ball against the wall, like maybe 10 feet up, and then you catch it in a squat again. And I essentially blew out a disc, and I ended up with bad back pain. That just kind of hurt in my hip for a really long time. And I used to sit on these medical ball, these little kind of baseballs to try and release. And eventually I got a some imaging, which seemed to suggest a disc bulge. And I did all of this physiotherapy and, you know, it never really got better. And I kind of settled into it. And I ended up having kind of ongoing pain despite the physiotherapy, and I ended up having to buy like a chair. It's kind of crazy. It's like a $6,000 dentist chair, which you can work in, but it kind of has a monitor that kind of sits on top of you in a way. And that's how I ended up working for several years, because it was hard to sit in a chair and the pain made it difficult to concentrate. I started eating paleo. And within about 2 months, my chronic back pain went away, and it didn't even have anything to do with my weight, because I was 210 then. You know, I'm about 170 now. I'm about 5'11". And even before the weight started to fall off, my back pain got better, and I kept up with it. And now I do, I guess, what you would call quiet paleo at the moment. And my back pain hasn't come back, and it happened within like a month or so of that. And so that really opened my eyes at the time to kind of, wow, I'd spent so much time and money seeing a physio and doing all of these exercises, but getting, and what I think happened to me was I got on a more anti-inflammatory diet, and something about that fixed the chronic pain. And yeah, but I imagine, do you hear stories like that in your patients when you're helping them, that not only is their mental health improving, but maybe weird pains, joint pains, things like that are kind of clearing up?
Well, first of all, that's a remarkable story. I'm so glad that, you know, you were able to, you know, to take care of that issue by changing your diet. And that's exactly the kind of story I hear all the time. And one of the most wonderful things about working this way is that when you feed the brain and the rest of the body properly, because, you know, all cells need the same basic nutritional care. So I'm not recommending a diet that's only good for the brain. It's obviously, good for the whole body. And so I hear this all the time, is that it's not just mental health that improves, it's total health that improves. And so aches and pains get better. You know, stomach issues get better. Digestion improves. Skin issues often improve. Sleep, all kinds of physical health issues that oftentimes people think are just normal aging, or, you know, they had an injury, so of course they're going to have pain in that area, or, well, this arthritis runs in their family, so of course they're just expecting not to feel well as they get older, to require knee replacements, to, you know, for organs to need to be removed, you know, all kinds of things we think of as normal aging, normal wear and tear. When you eat properly, your body has this remarkable ability to take care of itself and to heal and be resilient, and the brain as well. There's a resilience there. I mean, you could just expect so much more of yourself than we are taught to expect. We really have a pretty low bar when it comes to what we aim for in terms of our mental and our physical health. I mean, we've come to think of poor mental health as almost normal now. And that's not our birthright. We evolved to be robust and, you know, to have robust mental and physical health. So your story is a perfect example of that. You know, before I changed the way I practiced, when I was using medications and psychotherapy only for the first 10 years of my work, you know, I spent most of my time dealing with medication side effects. And now I spend most of my time, you know, enjoying and witnessing side benefits of, you know, eating properly. So that's one of the many joyful things about working this way.
Yeah. And I mean, you wrote a whole book on this, and you know, hundreds of pages on this. But if you could give us the brief, summarized version of why does what you eat affect your mental health? Like, because if you're like maybe just someone who's not interested in this, or maybe even you're a health professional, I was never really taught about diet going through training, apart from these are your macros, and that's kind of all you need to know. But no one ever kind of touched on it as being important for any other functioning. So I imagine even with the, you know, maybe even if you have a healthcare background, you might've never heard of this. What's the brief summary of why what you eat really does matter for your mental health and your brain? How does that all work?
Yeah. I mean, it's simple and it's complicated. And the simple answer is, and it's complicated, and that's why the book is as long as it is. Yeah. But really the reason the book is as long as it is because we've been fed the wrong information about nutrition for so many decades that most of what I need to do in the book is explain why the recommendations that I'm making are so different. The recommendations I'm making are very simple and I think quite easy to understand, but most of the book is written to help people understand why the truth about nutrition is so different than what we've been told. So, but ultimately, I don't want to scare people away from the diets because they're quite simple and the principles are quite simple. And really, why does the brain care so much about what we eat? Well, it's because every molecule, every cell, every membrane, every chemical, every salt ion in the brain, every part of that brain comes from the food you eat. And so really the most powerful way to change the way the brain develops, its structure, how well it's protected against injury and how well it functions and how well it ages, the most important thing you can do to influence all of those aspects of brain health is feed it properly. And I think the flip side of that is if you don't feed it properly, everything, anything and everything can and will go wrong, and really quite spectacularly. And so because we've been fed the wrong information about nutrition, we have been feeding our brains improperly our entire lives. And so they don't work well. They don't develop properly. They don't perform well under stress. They don't help us bounce back from trauma and injury and loss. They are not working well, and they don't age well. So they gradually lose their ability over time to generate energy, to use glucose and blood sugar for energy, which lays the groundwork for Alzheimer's disease ultimately. So, but when you feed the brain properly, what you get is a lot less inflammation. That's one of the root causes we know now of many mental health conditions. You get a lot less of something called oxidative stress, which is why we're told we're supposed to eat so many antioxidants. And you energize the brain in this very stable and very reliable way that protects brain metabolism for your entire lifespan, so that you can reliably produce energy in this calm and stable way that stabilizes brain chemistry from within. So how you feed yourself is everything to brain health. You can have the most ideal external environment. You can have a wonderful relationship. You can have, you know, you can be solid, financially stable. You can have a lot of, you know, love in your life. You can have purpose in your life. You can have good meditation. You can have really, you know, hobbies that you enjoy. Everything on the outside can be great, and you can still be very unstable from within. And that's what's happening with diet. So when people used to ask me when I practiced the usual way, you know, everything seems to be going so well in my life. You know, why do I want to die? And I never had a good answer to that question. I used to say things like, well, there must be a chemical imbalance. This runs in your family. You know, this is something that, maybe medication could be helpful for. There seems to be something, a biological piece to this, a chemistry piece to this. But we never stop to think, well, what's causing that chemical imbalance and that vulnerability in the first place? So it's not all about diet, but diet is the most logical place to start. And in my experience, it makes a tremendous difference for most people who apply the principles.
Mm-hmm. And I guess like some of the anecdotes, like yours and mine, you get the side benefits as well, where maybe pain disappears or rashes go away. It's globally, people are improving. And, you know, I want to make a, I'm going to make an assumption. Well, this is what I gathered from the book, and I just want to reflect it back to you and get you to clarify. So, you know, I walked away from the book thinking, okay, so diet is really one of these variables that we could be looking at. You know, it's not, you're not trying to say diet is the cause of all of these mental health conditions, but it's probably on a spectrum. And, you know, within people who are having depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, there may be some people in there where diet is doing relatively little, and you change the diet and maybe there's a marginal benefit or not much or nothing. And then, but there could also be some people hiding in there when you change their diet, the improvement in their symptoms is drastic. And then there could be all sorts of people in between. So we really don't know who is going to, who could potentially be having, you know, these large benefits, from changing, you know, their diet, but it needs to be looked at. Is that a fair, you know, would that be your position also? Or maybe you could add some nuance to that.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring it up, because for people who are listening to our conversation who think, well, you know, diet, well, yeah, I could probably clean up my diet a little bit, but you know, how, you know, I don't have a lot of hope here because, you know, I've had, you know, serious symptoms for 10 or 20 years, or I've been on 3 or 4 medications. I've been in and out of the hospital 10 times. You know, it might be helpful for some people, but it's not going to be helpful for me. And, you know, my condition is too serious, or it's been going on for too long, and diet is, you know, might be useful, but it's not going to be powerful intervention, you know, the way medications or, you know, other kinds of, you know, a serious illness requires serious treatment. I honestly, in my work, and in my research and the research and work of my colleagues as well in this field, I actually think that is not the case. I have found in working with hundreds of patients over the past 10, 12 years, that this is the most powerful biochemical and metabolic intervention I have at my disposal. And it's the only tool I've ever found that has been able to help at least some people, even some people with serious mental illnesses, chronic mental illnesses, who have been on multiple medications and been out of the hospital. It's the only intervention I've ever found that has a chance and a decent chance of bringing some people to complete recovery from even very serious longstanding mental illnesses. That's what I've seen in my own practice. And I've also seen it in, this study that I helped publish in 2022, a colleague of mine, a friend and colleague of mine, a psychiatrist in Toulouse, France, asked 31 of his most treatment resistant, most seriously chronically mentally ill patients to come into the hospital and try a very mildly, what's called a ketogenic diet. So many people may have heard of this diet in terms of weight loss or type 2 diabetes treatment, to try a very mildly ketogenic diet, whole foods ketogenic diet, under his supervision in the hospital. And 28 of those 31 patients who were able to stick to the diet for 2 weeks or longer, which is what you need to do to start to see results, all 28 of those people saw significant improvement in their mental health symptoms and in their physical health. 43% of them achieved clinical remission from their primary psychiatric diagnosis. This was bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and major depression. And 64% of them left the hospital on less psychiatric medication. And these were people who were taking, on average, when they came into the hospital, 5 psychiatric medications, had been ill for an average of 10 years, some as long as 30 years. And all of them had been hospitalized before most of them multiple times at, in many cases, this very same hospital under the care of this very same psychiatrist without, with just minimal improvement in the past. So this is an intervention which, you know, has tremendous power, even serious cases. And I think what we don't have yet is we don't have these rigorous, what are called randomized controlled trials of larger groups of people so that we can give you some sense of what the chances are that, you know, for a particular condition like major depression or bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or even anxiety disorders, PTSD, OCD, we don't have that level of scientific evidence to say, oh, 43%, you have a 43% chance of recovering if you have this particular diagnosis, or, oh, the ketogenic diet or this other dietary intervention helped 80% of these people or 10% of these people. We don't have that level of evidence yet, but those studies are being conducted as we speak, and they're looking really promising so far, the early numbers that are coming in. So what I say is this intervention, these types of interventions make sense almost no matter who you are, regardless of the diagnosis or how long you've been ill or how many medications you're taking. So I do think they hold tremendous hope for people who think they've tried everything and that nothing has worked. Mm-hmm. So I actually have a lot of confidence in them, and I know that it doesn't help everybody. Of course not. But I think they are worth considering almost regardless of the circumstances.
Yeah. And I think there's some other things I want to unpack, but I want to begin with, like, I mean, changing your diet, it's not going to change a childhood trauma or, you know, poverty or any difficult circumstances. But yeah, so you're still going to be there. But if you have less anxiety because your body is nourished, if you have better focus because your brain is nourished and you're sleeping better and you have less inflammation, you're going to just be in a much, much better situation to deal with any pre-existing mental health problems you have. And so I would agree with you. I think that it's something that everyone should try. I mean, I'm going to say that. I mean, if you're having a serious, any kind of mental health problem, it's hard to see a downside to it, apart from obviously the time it takes to do it, but it can be, I think it helps anyone in those situations.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up trauma because, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of my patients have trauma backgrounds and have been through some sometimes quite horrific things in their childhood and even later in life sometimes. And absolutely, changing your diet is not going to change your childhood. It's not going to change the genes you were born with, although it will control which of those genes are turned on, which of those genes are turned off. Because diet does influence gene behavior. It doesn't change the genes you were born with, but it changes the way your genes express themselves, which can be really remarkable. But it can't change what anything that's happened to you to this point. Of course, it's not going to change your living situation, or what you've lived with in the past. But what I hear so often from my patients who change their diets in these very particular ways, and there are a number of different ways that you can change your diet that I walk you through in the book. It's not all about ketogenic diets. There are other changes you can make. So paleo is a great example of that you were mentioning, Yosef. Mm-hmm. But what it does for so many of my patients is it allows them to step back from that experience that previously had been front and center. For example, a trauma that they felt that they were reliving constantly throughout their day, or that it was easily brought to mind with even just the very slightest suggestion or an image or an experience that would trigger those memories. And it wasn't just memories. It was like they were going back through it again. They were able to now step back from it, set it aside, and just kind of think about it differently. It gave them this perspective and this almost a buffering. Sometimes the way medication can, if it's working well, just some distance from that situation where they could step back and go, oh, I can kind of work with this in a different way. Or in their psychotherapy work, they would make more progress. In their meditation, they would find their meditation more effective. In their conversations or in their interactions from day to day, they would feel themselves not being quite so raw. You know, so many people with trauma histories, it's like they're walking through life almost, it's like with paper cuts and walking on broken glass and just so sensitive. Mm-hmm. And it gives them a thicker skin and allows them to see things a little differently. And I think that's huge for people. I mean, I'm working right now with a man that I've worked with for several years already, maybe 4 years now we've been working together, with a really, really traumatic childhood. And in most of our sessions, I mean, he was changing his diet along the way. Most of our sessions, it felt like we were having the same conversation over and over again, which was fine. You know, certain themes would keep coming up in certain situations in his marriage, would keep coming up in his relationship that felt like he was kind of stuck. And then when he changed his diet in this particular way, I suddenly felt like we were able to make progress after 3 years. And it just, he was able to move through and move past that circle that had really gotten him stuck for so long. I found myself having conversations with him about completely new things and in this very different way. And it just was a profound experience for me knowing him so well and seeing that happen for him. So I just want to give people out there hope that even if it feels very, very broken, there is a lot of hope here and certainly worth, as you were saying, Yosef, certainly worth a try.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting, the story about it didn't change the trauma, but there was something about, I'm going to just speak in kind of rough and loose terms here. You know, maybe, his brain felt safer, you know, or more, you know, just better nourished on the diet. And yeah, maybe he was less reactive. Maybe he was less in this kind of panic state where the brain was saying, you know, if it was starved of some kind of nutrients, it was making him more reactive. And then it, you know, the trauma still happened, but the way he dealt with it, it was just a lot easier to deal with. And I think that's just a very nice nuanced story that you told about how maybe just even changing your diet could change just your emotional state in some ways. And when your emotional state changes, that you've got more control over your situation, more control to deal with prior traumas. And thank you for sharing that story. I think it's, yeah, really, really great. I'm going to segue and jump to something else because I hadn't thought of it. Well, actually I had. I was going to come in here and say, Georgia, why haven't people been studying this in randomized controlled trials? What's going on? Like, you know, why aren't people looking at this? But then you kind of anticipated that and you shared that people are looking into this. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Who are the groups that are spearheading this research to put some empirical backing behind what, you know, tens of thousands of people are noticing, you know, when they change their diet already?
I am thrilled to answer that you've asked that question. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's interested in this topic, even a little bit, I would encourage you to go to a website called Metabolic Mind, metabolicmind.org. That is a wonderful website full of information, interviews, expert interviews, patient stories, research, all the interviews with scientists, interviews with clinicians, interviews with people with lived experience. From a great variety of perspectives about how these dietary interventions, the ketogenic diet in particular, but is really a focus of their work. To learn more. And that is a project, launched by the Baszucki Brain Research Fund, the Baszucki Group. And that's a family, Jan Ellison Baszucki and her husband David Baszucki and their son Matt Baszucki. They really launched this initiative as a family to help spread information and share resources and hope with people, even with serious mental illnesses, about the power of ketogenic diets and other types of metabolic therapies that address the root causes, some of the metabolic root causes of conditions like depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and anorexia, and all kinds of problems, anorexia, all kinds of other issues. That family went through their own very frightening story, where Matt, their son, who's now in his 20s, mid-20s, had his college career interrupted in California by serious bipolar disorder with psychotic features. He was, you know, off and on the streets, wandering the streets of California, on the verge of homelessness, ill, had tried, you know, dozens of medications, been in and out of the hospital, and had every resource available to him because his parents had a lot of resources and still do, which is how they started this foundation. He'd been to all kinds of specialists. He'd tried every kind of treatment. And it wasn't until his mother stumbled on the ketogenic diet as a possibility, that he was able to, completely recover from this very serious, mental illness. And he has now been in remission for 2 or 3 years now. He is completely well, and he speaks about these issues quite eloquently, uses his own story to try to help other people. And he and a researcher, a wonderful researcher by the name of Dr. Ian Campbell at the University of Edinburgh, who put his own bipolar disorder into full sustained remission more than 7 years ago now on a ketogenic diet. They host a YouTube channel called BipolarCast, which is specifically about bipolar disorder. So these are really powerful interventions, and the research is exploding around the world, largely thanks to grants and awards from that have been launched by the Baszucki Brain Research Fund. So we owe them a tremendous debt of gratitude for launching these studies, because, you know, we're not talking about medications. There's a lot of money in medication research. You can get funding for medication studies from pharmaceutical companies and from large governmental organizations as well. It's much harder to find money to study dietary interventions. So we're really grateful to them for their support.
And just so we can all, you know, myself and my colleagues, other physicians and people working in this space have something to look forward to, could you give us a sense of when some interim data is going to come out of these studies, so we can all, you know, mark it on our calendars and see how it's going? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So I can share with you, so Dr. Ian Campbell at the University of Edinburgh has already published his pilot data, just very recently published his pilot data in bipolar disorder. And what this was a feasibility study where he was trying to demonstrate he's interested in doing a robust randomized controlled trial, which, you know, would be a very rigorous type of study in people with bipolar disorder. So he started with a pilot trial and asking people with bipolar disorder to find out if they could A, follow a ketogenic diet and stay on it, B, measure their ketone levels every day, and C, whether, you know, how they would feel on a ketogenic diet. Was this safe? Was this feasible? Was this tolerable? Was this going to be manageable? And not only did most of the patients adhere beautifully to a ketogenic diet, they did it with flying colors. 91% were in ketosis all the time, and quite robust ketosis, meaning the ketone levels were substantial. They weren't just in mild ketosis; they were in moderate ketosis most of the time. And they were able to report they were able to measure their ketone levels. They were able to report those ketone levels, and they were able to they felt better. So they felt better in terms of irritability, in terms of energy level, in terms of mood, in terms of focus. The higher the ketone levels were, the better they felt. And wow. So this really is a remarkable finding. And going beyond that, Dr. Campbell is really a very meticulous researcher, and he did something that hasn't been done before. he didn't just measure ketones. He didn't just administer mood questionnaires. He didn't just do what most researchers do in terms of he actually used a technique called magnetic resonance spectroscopy. It's a certain type of MRI, a brain imaging modality that, you know, can look at brain chemistry. And he measured the levels of a couple of different substances in the brain during this study and what happened to them on a ketogenic diet. He measured, most importantly, he measured something called glutamate. So glutamate is a neurotransmitter in the brain, a brain chemical, which is, it's basically the brain's most important excitatory neurotransmitter. You can kind of think of it as the brain's gas pedal. And so how much glutamate is in the brain at any given time helps determine your brain's overall activity level, how activated it is. And that's supposed to be in balance with another brain chemical called GABA. So GABA is the brain's calming neurotransmitter or brake pedal. So he measured that. So it's been known for a long time that glutamate levels in people with certain mental health conditions, including bipolar disorder, are overactive or not regulated properly. There's too much glutamate in the brain, so there's too much activity, too much energy in the brain. And that can cause people to have trouble sleeping or to have racing thoughts or to have a lot of anxiety or irritability. He measured the brain glutamate levels and they came down on the ketogenic diet more than any other study has ever demonstrated. All the medication studies, any other intervention that's ever been done, he measured the greatest reduction in brain glutamate level that has ever been measured. So again, this is a very powerful neurotransmitter level intervention. This is a neurotransmitter that some of our psychiatric medications are designed to try to, that balance between glutamate and GABA is what so many of our medications are trying to address. And the diet was able to address it in this very profound way. And so he is now working on designing a large randomized controlled trial. And there are lots of organizations interested in helping to fund that, his next body of research.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that update. The part of it as someone who used to be quite involved in this, that is really compelling to me, was that there was this dose dependent relationship in where, you know, the higher the ketones, the better the people felt. That's really compelling for a causal relationship. So I can't wait to see what happens when this study gets off the ground. But I want to be mindful. I know we have 10 minutes left, so I want to actually get your take on a couple things. You know, when I say takes, these don't have to be like fully reasoned out. This can be your gut feeling opinion on things. You can just kind of shoot them at me. So what are your thoughts about statins?
I'm a no on statins. Okay. And so I'm not a cardiologist, so I can say this in a less careful way than cardiologists will need to say it. But statins offer extraordinarily small potential benefits for people who have a history of existing heart disease. They offer no appreciable benefits that I can see to anyone else. And their risks far outweigh even the potential benefits that may exist for certain patients, because statins interfere with a very important pathway in the brain and the rest of the body that doesn't just build cholesterol molecules, which the brain relies on to build cholesterol molecules, mm-hmm. which are extraordinarily important for brain structure, but which cells throughout the body and brain rely on to make many other very important molecules that are important for health and metabolism. So, and they also significantly increase your risk for type 2 diabetes and cognitive impairment because of the way they interfere with normal cell biology. So I am not a fan of statins, and I always advise my patients to try to, you know, have that conversation with their primary care or cardiologist about the risks versus benefits.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And I want to ask you about functional medicine as well, because I am quite familiar with functional medicine, having done training in there and kind of following it. And there's a big component of diet in there, which I'm on board with. But there's also heavy supplementation, which is often done in functional medicine. And, you know, people kind of will leave these places with like baskets full of supplements. I wanted to get your sense of, do you believe in supplementing like vitamins and things like that? Or do you stick mostly to like, hey, you can get everything from your diet, you know, so long as you're eating, I guess, animal meats and you're not on something more restrictive. What do you think about all of the supplement use in the functional medicine world?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a food first psychiatrist, and a supplement only when necessary psychiatrist. And so, there are some people, even if you're eating the most perfect diet, whatever that might mean, whatever that might be, even if you're eating the ideal human diet, you may still fall short on certain nutrients, particularly if you have some difficulty absorbing or processing those nutrients, because there are so many common conditions and medications that you might be taking. Gut damage, aging, there are quite a few things that can interfere with normal nutrient processing in the gut. And so in some cases, supplementation may be necessary. Or if you're not willing or able to change your diet in ways that will shore up your nutrients. I certainly have patients who, you know, there are some changes they don't feel comfortable making. Then nutrient supplementation will be very important in those cases as well. So, but I do like to measure whenever possible to make sure that nutrient supplementation is actually required, because you can have too much of a good thing, and nutrient supplements can be expensive. They can be unnecessary. And they can even reach toxic levels if you're not careful. So that's where I stand on supplementation.
Thanks. Yeah. What are the best, let's say you're someone and you want to do a ketogenic diet, but it's hard to find the time to do it. Are there any meal services that you've come across that maybe ship to your door, or any kind of hacks where someone, you know, if they have the resources and they want to do it, they could jump on a paleo or a ketogenic diet and be supported? What have you seen out there?
Yeah, so there are lots. There's a growing number of resources like that available now as ketogenic diets become more popular for other conditions, things like weight loss and type 2 diabetes. There are more meal delivery services. There are lots more websites with free recipes and books and all kinds of other resources people can turn to, support groups and so forth. There are dietitians who are expert in this, who can, you know, consult with you one time or multiple times to help you, you know, get on track. And so plenty of resources, and some of them I list in the book. But I would also say that, you know, it may take some extra support or knowledge and practice in the beginning. But once you get the hang of it, doesn't take that long. Once you get the hang of it, those special services and supports won't be necessary any longer unless you really want them, you know. And so I want people to know that there is that learning curve in the beginning. But it doesn't take long to get it down. And the other thing I want to say is that if you are thinking about trying any kind of a low carbohydrate or ketogenic or even carnivore diet, to please learn more about them first and work with somebody who knows something about these interventions, because these are powerful interventions and they can change medication levels and blood pressure and blood sugar levels and they can, your fluid and electrolyte balance, they can change these things very quickly, which is a good thing. These are healthy and good changes, but if those aren't monitored and carefully managed especially during the beginning, it can potentially be dangerous. So please don't just start a ketogenic diet and stop your medications. Please learn more about them and work with somebody who has some experience.
Okay. Yeah. There's a whole chapter in there of the dangers of, a whole section on the dangers of jumping to a ketogenic diet too quickly and all of that. So like you said, powerful interventions that shouldn't be done without working with someone who knows what they're doing. Now I've got a couple questions that maybe more for me actually. What's What's the easiest way to scratch that bread craving if you're doing a ketogenic diet? And it may just be there is none, and I'll have to accept it.
Not at all. I mean, if this were 10 or 15 years ago, it would be hard for me to give you a good answer to that question. But there are now so many keto-friendly bread substitute recipes and hacks and tips and tricks. Some of the better ones, some of the more popular ones can be found, for example, on the Diet Doctor website. They have some very popular bread recipes that are very simple. And also I would recommend the work any cookbook or online resource by Maria Emmerich and Craig Emmerich, Emmerich. They're just wizards at coming up with substitutions, really, really easy and really tasty substitutions for some of your favorite foods.
And if you're not doing milk, what's the best thing to put with your keto cereal in the morning? If you're going dairy free, what have you seen?
Well, it'd be hard to find a keto cereal that doesn't have, well, what kind of a keto cereal are we talking about exactly?
I don't know. My wife buys it. I feel like it's made out of dates or something like that.
Does it look like granola or does it look like an actual cereal?
Like a cereal, there's kind of like these puffs.
Yeah. Okay. So those are usually made from whey protein, actually. Mm-hmm. So they're not dairy free. They're usually made with whey powder, and sometimes with pea protein. Now the answer to this question really depends on what you like and what you tolerate well. So if you tolerate coconut milk well or unsweetened almond milk, those would be two. So unsweetened coconut milk or unsweetened almond milk would be two of the better choices. Okay. When you get into your oat milks, the oat milk has too many carbohydrates and often has vegetable oil added and is really quite sweet on its own, even if it's unsweetened. So that's not a great choice. And soy milk, soy has all kinds of problems soy is not a particularly healthy choice in general.
Yeah. Okay. And the final one is there a replacement for protein powder? If you've been on casein protein powder or whey protein powder, or is it just eat steaks after you work out and just kind of just skip all of that stuff?
It's always best if you can avoid powdered ingredients, but don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. If a powdered ingredient helps you stay in ketosis and that's what you need to do to be well, you might want to try an egg protein powder instead of a whey or casein if you're sensitive to dairy. Because what happens with the whey protein powder and even with the casein protein powder is they can spike your insulin levels quite substantially, which will lower your ketone levels. And so all powdered ingredients can do that, but the egg protein powder is less likely to do that.
Wow. Georgia, thank you so much for indulging my questions at the end. You know, it's just been a pleasure having you on. Quickly, I know we're right at the limit right now. Tell people, where can they find your book? Where can they find you online so they can learn more about these diets?
So you can find the book everywhere, anywhere that you would normally shop for, everywhere you like to shop for books. I really like to point people to bookshop.org because that supports independent booksellers, but you can find the book on Amazon and anywhere else you like to buy books and in bookstores even. You can find more information about the book and about the work and resources, all kinds of, and my clinician directory, which is free. It's an international clinician directory where you can search for clinicians in your area who already use these tools in their practice and might be able to support you in your transition to a ketogenic diet. And you can find information about my clinician training program as well if your clinician wants to learn how to do this. Everything's on the website, and the website is called diagnosisdiet.com. Or you can just put my name into your search engine and say Georgia Ead website and it will pop up.
Dr. Georgia Ead, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak with me and my audience. I really appreciate you. I really appreciate the work that you're doing.
I really appreciate the work that you're doing too. And I really appreciate the invitation. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm happy to come back if it's ever useful.
thank you for listening to today's episode. If you want to see the full video interview, we also post these to YouTube. Just go to Wittering Psychiatry on YouTube to find those. You'll also find several YouTube exclusive videos from Drs. Yosef and Marissa posted several times a week. Finally, if you need help with your drug taper, getting a second opinion, or managing your post-acute withdrawal, come visit us at witduringpsychiatry.com. Our sole focus is on helping patients regain control of their lives and achieve optimal mental health on as little medications as possible.